Now, Clarity from Chaos on TalkZone.com, the show that focuses on the innovative solutions to today's issues. Here's your host, Dave Campbell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. I trust everybody's Wednesday's going well. If you'd like to be a participant on the show, the call-in number is 1-888-GO-FOR-IT or 1-888-463-6748. If you like the show and would like to drop me a comment, you can reach out and do that with an email at info@clarityfromchaos.com. You can also go out to my blog site and drop me a note from there as well. I would like to take another quick moment, as I do in every show, to thank those of you that are out looking at my blog site and going down to the lower right-hand corner and contributing to the couple of organizations that I support, one being the Open Arms Orphanage and the other one being the Homeless Youth Connection. Homeless Youth is run by a remarkable individual by the name of Larry Savarich, and the Open Arms Orphanage, run out of South Africa, is run by a dear friend of mine by the name of Bob Solis. Both are extraordinary individuals, and I appreciate so much your contributions and your help with those two activities. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking to Dr. Tom Markham, and going to be spending a lot of time discussing the current state of education and what Tom is trying to do to help with that. And we're also going to be talking about another passion of Tom's, which is heart-centered intelligence, which we touched on last week, which I think will be an interesting topic. Again, if you'd like to join the show, the call-in number is 888-GO-FOR-IT or 888-463-6748. Now, we spend a lot of time on this show talking about white noise. And by white noise, what I mean is the current barrage of information that you're getting from the entertainment capital of the world, aka the news media, because very, very little of it, unfortunately, unless you dig into the internet and do a lot of research, bears even, I wouldn't even say a minutia of truth, because most of it, if not all of it, is agenda driven. And I was reading the Investor Business Daily yesterday or the day before, and noticed that they came out with a new series on the history of propaganda, which I thought, quite frankly, was extremely timely, and apparently it's going to be an ongoing series, and I think it'd be well worth your time to read. I'm also going to post it up on my blog site for those to read, because I think it's very, very important, and given the environment that we've seen over the last couple of weeks with the trial of the incident that happened in Florida, and the unreported incidents that are happening all over the place, I thought it was really important that we touch base on this wonderful world of what's going on in the media, you know, i.e. the propaganda that they continue to spew out. Now, some of the interesting points that the article in the Investor Business Daily article has pointed to is, for those who would rule absolutely, such liberties are intolerable. Rather than ensure a free and open discussion of ideas, philosophies, and politics, they seek to monopolize the conversation, and they do it via propaganda. Now, I'm sure we're all well aware of it. The unfortunate part is a lot of people are buying into this whole display of propaganda, and they're not really understanding, and I don't know if they're not understanding or not taking the time to seek the truth on their own. But the unfortunate part is an awful lot of people are buying the bilge water, hook, line, and sinker, and I'm not just speaking of the recent non-guilty verdict in the trial in Sanford, Florida, but I'm speaking in general, the bilge water that is constantly being spewed out. And the article, and fortunately, it appears that it's going to be an ongoing series in IBD. So if you haven't read it, again, I'm going to post it up on my blog site, but I would encourage you to go out and read it because it's pretty insightful. The lesson that the article points out has been well learned by tyrants of all stripes. By controlling both the media and the message, rulers can bend people's minds to their will. This isn't mere theory. It's a fact of history. And with the advent of new media, the internet, cell phones, tablets, PCs, of course, radio and TV, propaganda can reach nearly everybody. Since the beginning of civilized time, regimes with varying degrees of success have used propaganda to control what we know and what they'd rather we didn't know. And this has gone on, obviously, through the ages. But I think it's well worth paying attention to, folks, because I think there's being, well, obviously for the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a large full court press on this whole term of propaganda. And the unfortunate part is, and, you know, obviously the people spewing out the propaganda understand this psychologically. The sad part about this is a lot of people are buying into it. You know, what we talk about on a weekly basis is rediscovering that magnificent individual that you are, and to stop allowing people to control your thinking and at the end of the day, basically controlling your life, because that's what this is. This is what it's truly all about, is moving everybody into a controllable circle. And quite frankly, folks, they're doing a pretty damn good job of it. All you have to do is kind of look around, and you can see the split on what happened in Florida. And you can obviously, if you have any kind of clarity, can see the lack of truth, the lack of clarity, the lack of authenticity that's being reported on just basically across the board. And I make reference to, I guess yesterday, just in an article in the USA Today, where they basically titled the article of one of the jurors coming out of that trial. Basically, they took a very, very small snippet, and the same way that NBC audited the 911 calls to promote their agenda. Now, what I believe they're doing is they're promoting their agenda basically from a profit motive, because if they can put a headline out there that's something that's going to grab somebody, which, you know, article titles are supposed to do to begin with, but it's all about selling their newspaper, so on and so forth. The unfortunate part about it is the article didn't contain any modicum of truth, just as the other major news medias have continually hammered on what's going on in Florida. But back to the whole idea about propaganda. You don't have to look too far back in history, too far at all, to see where propaganda has led. An entire country, not too very long ago, was convinced of certain things, which ended up leading us into the Second World War. You had the rise of the Soviet Union. As I just mentioned, you had Nazi Germany, Communist China, each used totalitarian media to control and to ensure that one message and only one message got through to the people. So again, ladies and gentlemen, you really need to start discerning about what's going on out there. In such scenarios, all competing ideas and individuals are crushed. It is this latter use of propaganda that's most disturbing. And as I said, in the not too distant past, propaganda has been used both to facilitate and to rationalize mass slaughter, enslavement, and oppression. And folks, if we're not vigilant, if we don't pay attention to this, and if we don't start regaining our control over this situation, you're going to see it again. Now, I'm absolutely, absolutely 100% pleased. We have a new sponsor, People Tech Coaching. Now, a friend of mine, Mike Kublin, who's the CEO of People Tech Coaching, has put together what he terms as the leadership journey. Now, this is for anybody, whether you're an executive, housewife, anybody. This course that he's put together will enhance who and what you are. Not only is it not a one-time event, but it is over a series of 12 sessions. And what it provides, ladies and gentlemen, is a thorough understanding of your leadership style and preferences, how you are perceived by others, how to express what you want and how to achieve it. Utilize the uniqueness of others to fulfill your vision, how to market your own unique skills, how to give and receive feedback, how to meet difficult situations head on, and how to successfully manage change. Now, as I said, this is for everybody. This is something that I would encourage everybody to reach out and utilize if you see the value in this. Again, this is People Tech Coaching, and you can reach them at 1-888-565-9555. Again, that's 888-965-9555. I don't think you'll be disappointed. Now, as I said, Dr. Tom Markham is going to be on with us after the break. Now, Tom is a psychologist, an author, speaker, educator, and an international consultant on creativity and inquiry-based learning, 21st century skills, and school redesign. He's the primary author of the handbook on project-based learning and the author of Welcoming 2012, a book on heart-centered intelligence. He has worked with nearly 5,000 teachers across 5 continents, providing proven methods for school transformation and the integration of the 7 key aspects of successful inquiry-based learning, where teachers have discovery and empowerment, organizational alignment, entrepreneurial project-based learning, development of a higher performance culture, teaching and assessment of 21st century skills, curriculum redesign, and the use of digital resources in the learning management system. So when we come back from the break, we'll talk to Tom. You're listening to Clarity from Chaos on Talk Zone Radio.
And now, more Clarity from Chaos on TalkZone.com. Here's Dave Campbell.
Welcome back, everybody. Again, if you'd like to join the show, it's 1-888-463-6748. I'm very pleased that a friend of mine, Dr. Tom Markham, has elected to come back and join us again. How you doing, Tom?
Very good, Dave. How are you today?
I'm doing just peachy.
Okay.
Just peachy. Hey, I was reading your blog off your website, mm-hmm. on on education, on inquiry learning, which I thought was fabulous, versus standardized content. Right. And there's been an awful lot of discussion lately and a lot of pushback on this whole concept of Common Core state standards and so on and so forth. But I loved the statement that you made in your article where education's core task is to prepare young people to generate new ideas, filter them through a net of critical analysis and reflection, and move the ideas through a design process to create a quality product either as an idea or as a material object. To me that just harkens back, you know, to where education really should be, and I just thought that was fabulous, and I thought, you know, I'd throw that out there and let you comment on it.
Well, I think you and I are in agreement here. This is where we're trying to go. I think actually a lot of educators feel the same way. They would love to go in that direction. I think for a couple of reasons. One is it's more satisfying to young people. They just came out with a recent study. I don't have the citation in front of me, but what engages kids is when they're able to innovate and think about things that are of interest to them and can really engage in creativity. Creativity is the great engagement factor and probably the one factor we're missing in our school system at the moment. So everybody wants to move in that direction. The Common Core standards are, I think, an attempt to do that. They definitely, the people who wrote the standards have tried to build in more problem solving and inquiry into the standards. But I think there's, at least in my mind, some questions about whether they're going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the whole concept of creative learning or creativity in general gets beat out of kids to the point when they reach adulthood, their creativity is pretty thin. And I think reintroducing that, especially, you know, in the early years and into the mid years, you know, where kids' creativity is, you know, has peaked in there, would probably benefit a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, they say that if you take a class of first graders and ask them to raise their hands, for how many of them can either sing or draw, the entire class will raise their hand. If you take a class of high school seniors, you might get one person very timidly raise their hand. So something right. changes in 15 years or 12 years. So, you know, we all like the notion of innovation and creativity. I should also say I think we're in a world in which we're reinventing everything. And so we need to raise a generation of young people who are capable of divergent thinking, creativity, problem solving, innovation, however you want to characterize it. Right. We're reinventing our institutions. We're reinventing our roles in society. We're reinventing society itself. We're reinventing how we participate in and relate in a global world. So there's lots of room for this. What I focus on in my educational work is how we can do this in some sort of reasonable way, because one of the things I don't think works, or and I certainly wouldn't advocate for, is you just can't turn kids loose and say, well, go discover something or go create something.
Right.
Because we've also, it's pretty clear that in order to discover something, you also first need to know something. You need to have vocabulary in place or something like, oh, you have to have the tools. You have to have knowledge of the discipline. So that's the balance, sort of the knife's edge we're on at the moment, in which we're trying to encourage much more creativity in our schools. And this is true, by the way, not just in U.S. schools. This is a big topic in other countries as well. So we're trying to encourage the creativity at the same time, balance that out with, well, what do kids need to know at this point? What should, for example, an 18-year-old know when they graduate from secondary school? And this is difficult, so that's the balance that I think most educators are involved in. I shouldn't say all, because some are kind of content with the system we have at the moment. And then there's another wing that says, well, just turn them loose and let the kids figure out what they need to do. So I'm somewhere in the middle of that.
Well, you know, part of your article, and there's some key points that really struck me that I thought were interesting is you have one in here about blending critical thinking, social emotional learning, and other valuable skills. And I think probably all three or four of those aren't really introduced that much anymore in what you would term as the public education system.
Yeah, it's it varies, Dave, really. You'll find a fair amount of emphasis on social-emotional learning in the elementary grades and even in the middle school. And then at the high school level, maybe not, probably not really. It's not something that is part of the high school system, although people will talk about it, but there's no room in the curriculum for it. I'm an advocate of social-emotional learning. On the other hand, what I would say as we move forward, we've really got to think more deeply about that and think of how learning is integrated. In other words, social-emotional learning is a term that is derived from the fact that we have the old version of learning, which is cognition in the brain, and then, oh, by the way, we might have another part of human beings called social-emotional learning. Really, to my mind, we're working towards a much more integrated view of that. The example I often use is, one of the things that we're trying to teach kids these days in school is how to work in a team or how to collaborate. Everyone has identified that as a core 21st century competency. And it's fine to teach kids to work in a team, but you can't work in a team unless you have some sort of empathetic feeling within yourself. Well, where does empathy come from? So a neuroscientist might say it comes from the brain. I don't subscribe to that notion. So it's a deeper quality. So we're really looking for a more integrated form of learning, I think, as we move forward in the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. The whole team concept is going to have to blend, you know, both the heart and the head as they move into it. Because I think, you know, at least I see it from my consulting standpoint, you know, the heart and the head in a lot of cases aren't connected. And the consequence to that is you tend to have a dysfunctional team. Because the empathy's not there, there is no understanding for the other individuals or embracing the other individual's thoughts and ideas.
Yeah, it's to work in a team effectively requires empathy. It requires openness. As I'll often say to teachers or students I'm working with, it requires the ability to work with people you don't like.
Right.
And so how do you overcome that barrier and say, well, yeah, I don't like you? You know, for kids, this comes up a lot. You know, I didn't go to the same middle school that you did, so I'm not going to hang with you. We don't eat lunch in the quad together.
Right.
So, teachers have to deal with these kinds of things. You just have to sort of teach them to go to, a higher place is one way to describe it.
You put that
aside and you say, yeah, you know, we're not that compatible. We're not going to hang together, all day or on Friday night, but we can work together to accomplish something.
Right. You know, so, you know, introduction of this value is kind of interesting because I think that's what kind of scares people away, right? They don't want that injected into the school system. And I think at a far reach, Tom, you know, the whole religious aspect of it has been bleached out of the school system for that very reason. So this whole idea of values and everything else and parents entrusting teachers to help their children, you know, gain the authenticity, the value, you know, the value, the empathy and all of that other stuff. That's going to need to raise the teachers' skill sets as well, right?
I would say that's the probably the chief barrier and something that is going to be very difficult to do. That's why educators who are introducing Common Core are basically nervous or possibly terrified about training all their teachers to do Common Core, because as soon as you move into problem solving, teamwork, sort of shared inquiry, you bring up all these other factors like empathy, teamwork, openness, respect, right, character, values, and all this. It's kind of a Pandora's box that gets opened.
Right.
And once it opens, it can't be closed. Now, I would argue it's open. We can't close it anyway.
Right.
We're not going to do it. I actually believe, this is my opinion, is that the Common Core standards are going to be around for a few years and disappear, because I don't think actually we're going to be able to make standardized information compatible with creativity, empathy, investigation, and teamwork. I think they're really at opposite ends of the spectrum, and we're going to have to figure out how to reconcile those, and I'm not sure there is a way to reconcile, and there may be two different ways of thinking and educating.
Yeah, yeah, I'm, you know, I can hear the arguments in my head already, you know, and I can see the value of what we're talking about in all of this, but then I can see the environments and the arguments that's going to come with it. Another thing that your article pointed out, which I thought was really interesting, was teaching inquiry skills. Again, like you pointed out at the beginning when we were started talking about all the kindergarten kids raising their hands, and then when they got into the seniors in high school, you know, maybe one, maybe two, I have to wonder about these inquiry skills, you know?
You know, it's maybe, again, I guess I'll back up just one step and say that so much of what we're trying to reach for in the 21st century is a matter of redefining what we think of as, for example, skills. So something I often think about is a skill used to be defined something like being able to push a plow behind a horse and keep a straight line, and that used to be a skill. And now when we talk about a skill of inquiry or even the skill of teamwork, we're talking about something much deeper. So a skill isn't just sort of an add-on to your personality. It's part of your personality. It's part of how you operate as a person. And so when we look at the skills of inquiry, a lot of that, again, comes down to things like curiosity, drive, grit, the ability to persevere through a problem. So the skills of inquiry are deeply related to your personal qualities or your personal strengths, as a psychologist would say. And so I believe that we're going to have to sort of come back, particularly in the early years of education, say in the K through 8 level until kids are 12 or 14, to really focus on developing those kinds of strengths, which will allow them to then have the skills to do good inquiry. So it's a very large question, probably too big for an industrialized school system. But I think if you look at some of these issues, this is why our schools are, if you sort of trace it back, this is why our schools are having such difficulty, because they can't really focus on what's important. We're still focused on the five causes of the Civil War and understanding photosynthesis, which may be important things to understand, or to know, but they're not the fundamental piece of education anymore.
When we come back, Tom, I want to hit on a few more topics. You're listening to Clarity from Chaos on Talk Zone Radio.
This is Clarity from Chaos on TalkZone.com with your host, Dave Campbell.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We're talking to Dr. Tom Markham, and we've been discussing, if you just joined us, we've been discussing his article on inquiry learning versus standardized content. Tom's done an awful lot of work on project-based learning. Let's talk, briefly about, and I love this, make cohorts and teams the practice, not the exception. I really like it. I had a conversation the other day with a gentleman about a school setting where you got representatives of all the children and you created these teams to basically outline a lot of the things that we're talking about here, but let the kids you know, work as a team to build a lot of the stuff that they, you know, obviously you've got the core components that you need to teach, but a lot of these other components, and leave it up to the kids to kind of direct that. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, a lot of that is going on now. I think the impulse is good. I certainly support it. I think the implementation is a little uneven because I think educators are learning to do this well. Industry is far ahead of education in terms of looking at teams and seeing how they function and why they function and what the right size is and what the qualities that each person needs to make a good contribution to the team are. So it's a little uneven for education, but it's early. One of the things that I'm advocating these days, first of all, as a first step, is to actually use the word team, which right. is not the most common use of mostly we're still on the term group, which is something that's from the 80s and 90s that, you know, cooperative learning, put the kids in a group. This is the most common way to describe it. And the first thing I do is say, well, let's talk about a team. What does a team mean? A team means commitment, accountability, a shared process to create something. It means giving feedback to one another. It means showing up and seeing yourself as a member of the team, not just as a member of the group. I live in San Francisco, so I often use the example, there's a reason the San Francisco 49ers don't call themselves the San Francisco 49ers football group. It's weak. Right. So, you know, just thinking in terms of teams, and then the second piece is, and this is, again, something that drops out quite a bit, is actually teaching or training young people how to work in a team. I mean, it takes time, and time is at a premium in schools. So the first impulse is just throw them together and say you're now a team. Well, industry wouldn't do that. They would spend a lot of time training people to work in a team, and I think that's where education needs to go as well. And then the third piece is I think that all education should be done not solely through teams by any means, but it should be a predominant mode, and I say that because I believe that, well, for two reasons. One, the way of the world is working in teams these days. That's the way kids are going to have to operate. And second of all, I think it's a natural for them, and I think they enjoy it. And I would say the problems of the world are too complex for one brain, so let's put a number of brains together on anything when we're trying to create a new solution or find a resolution to a problem.
Oh, I think they, you know, and I've made this comment before, but I think if you put six housewives together, you solve the national debt issue. You know, if you took it, you know, if you took it away, if you took it away from the individuals that have it, and I think there, I think you would come up with some extraordinary ideas if you just pulled a group of kids together and threw a problem on the table. I think you would be amazed at the different. Manners in which they would come up with some kind of a solution around it.
Absolutely. Now that creates a bit of an issue for our educational system. I've noticed this in some other blogs because really the industrialized educational system, the way we now organize it still, is really predicated on you will give us the answer that we already know.
Right.
And give it back to us. And the more fidelity that you can show us in presenting the answers you give it back to us, the higher your grade. So if you give it back to me as a teacher exactly the way I gave it to you, you'll get an A. And that runs counter to the whole notion of creating something new.
Right.
And the notion of, well, gee, maybe this is a little bit out of the box. So, you know, I probably get a lot of pushback from other educators and have at times, but honestly, I think we're seeing the demise of this industrialized way of thinking about information, and we're moving towards process, inquiry, creativity, and we're going to rebalance sort of the information piece with the inquiry piece, and the information is going to diminish, partly because we're in this Google world where I mentioned earlier, for example, the five causes of the Civil War. You know, you get your smartphone out, you can bring that up in 8 seconds on Google.
Right.
It's just not something we need to teach anymore. What we need to teach is, well, what does that mean to a situation like Syria where they're having an actual civil war right now in real time? So that's the shift, and it's a big one.
No, I agree. And, you know, interestingly, I think there's probably a lot of educators out there that would welcome this shift, because not only do the educators grow, but the kids grow in this environment as opposed to just stamping widgets. But then, like I said, I could see all of the other issues with the values, the authenticity, the honesty, the accountability, and all those other parts and pieces, being somewhat of a dilemma for, certain people that want to control the situation as opposed to letting it mature and get better. So.
Yeah. I don't know if there's going to be time to let it mature and get better. That's the problem in our world.
True.
Things just need to happen. And we got, 55 million students or whatever we have, and I'm not sure they want to wait. And I'm not sure. This is the problem with living in a suddenly transformed global world. You don't have the luxury of allowing your system to evolve. It almost has to make a leap. And
right.
I think that's what we're trying to do, and that's why it's kind of painful. And it's complex. It's probably too complex in a way to do, but somehow we got to fumble our way through it because the kids need something different. I mean, they are not engaged in their learning in general right now. And we have to figure out a way to get them engaged, because unless they're engaged, we don't get – sort of the highest liberation of their talents and their passions, and we need that. So we're trying to figure out how to do that. A lot of individual teachers have figured out how to do it. There's a lot of good stuff going on in school. So, I mean, I see it.
Yep.
But as a system,
right.
we're struggling.
Well, yeah, that makes a good segue to what I wanted to talk to you about as far as heart-centered intelligence. I think people are just starting to recognize the connection between your heart and your head, and I know you've done a lot of work around it. So let's take that jump and start talking about the heart and its role in all of this.
Well, my fundamental take on it is that we can't get where we want to go, either as a society or with our educational system, and develop this kind of insight, creativity, and really what I would call emotional balance that's required to be a good, resilient, inquiry-based thinker these days. And the emotional balance and the divergent thinking has been related directly back to the functions of the heart. So the heart, as we know, but what science is showing very clearly is that the heart, when you use positive emotions, has self-regulatory abilities with your body and with your brain. And it shifts, the more emotionally balanced you are, the more your brain shifts into the frontal lobes and the creative parts of your brain rather than the hindbrain or the reptilian part of your brain, which is really governs more, fears or negative emotions. And so somehow we got to figure out how to use the heart more in education in order to get to this kind of level of skillfulness that we're looking for in our kids.
Yep.
So the heart has clear ability to calm you down, push you towards more creative, divergent thinking, and the ability to give you some sort of clarity. Now, this relates directly, to the theme of your show, clarity out of chaos, because if
right.
you're living in a world that, in which there's a lot of chaos, and there's a lot of shifts, and there's a lot of crazy messages out there, we know this affects the brain. Well, how do you remain clear within this environment? And the heart is really a big way of doing that. So when we talk about heart intelligence, probably it's more accurate to say that there is a holistic heart-brain regulatory mechanism that allows you to operate at your highest potential and in your highest creative state. And the heart is essential to that. Again, I think the message we get from science, particularly from neuroscience, at the moment is that it all happens in the brain. I don't think that's true. I think that ignores some of the science on the heart, but that is the dominant message at the moment. So one of the things that we're looking to do, I think, is go beyond what I would call neuromania and discover a better balance between the heart and the brain.
Okay, so when we come back, Tom, I want to continue this conversation. So you're listening to Clarity from Chaos on Talk Zone Radio.
Welcome back to Clarity from Chaos on TalkZone.com. Here's Dave Campbell.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Dr. Tom Markham, and in case you just joined us, we've covered the educational component that Tom is so passionate about in project-based learning. I would encourage you to go out to Tom's website and get more information, and it's www.TomMarkham.com, and you can see all the great things that Tom's been doing. So, Tom, I want to talk about, when we talk about heart-centered intelligence, and we talked about, I talked about a lot at the start of the show about propaganda and how, you know, collectively, propaganda is used basically to control the masses. And I think this whole heart-centered intelligence, if we can somehow create a movement to where enough people decide to or choose to start making the shift to being more and more positive, then that's going to have a large effect on what's going on today.
Yeah, this is a big topic, Dave, and obviously takes us beyond the realm of education and into some pretty edgy science and even some metaphysics. But, here's my belief is that as we move forward in this century, we are going to not just discover but confirm that we're really more energetically based beings than we are physically based, and that the energies that we work with connect us, and that those energies are mediated by love through the heart, and that unconditional love is the way that we put forth an energy that connects us to others, and that the more people begin to feel that, the more that they will feel connected. That's one thing, but I believe that also the second thing that happens is you get more clarity in the masses. So just as through heart intelligence, using your own heart can you give you clarity in your own mind and your own brain and allow your brain to function at a higher level. And presumably when that happens, you begin to see through such things as propaganda and they suddenly appear to you the way they with a lot more clarity, like, well, that doesn't make sense. Hopefully that's going to happen on a global scale. And that, I believe, can happen through enough people working through heart intelligence and collectively sharing those energies so that all of us begin to sort of resonate at a higher frequency that allows clearer thinking. That's my view. Obviously, that's not within complete scientific confirmation at the moment, although there's a lot of very interesting research being done on fields of consciousness, and we have seen quite clearly in the last 15 years through work that was done, for example, at Princeton, that there is some indication, strong indication, statistically significant indications that events that happen in the world that have worldwide prominence that somehow shifts the magnetics of the planet, indicating that something is connected. And the Institute of Heart and Math with their Global Consciousness Project is presently investigating that very extensively. So there are efforts to understand scientifically how we are connected. Now, I don't think that for a lot of people, and particularly maybe for younger people who think in terms of pulling out their smartphone and using a cell phone field to connect, that may not be too big a reach.
Yeah, you know, it may not. I saw an interesting thing the other day about electromagnetic pulses coming, you know, from obviously from various celestial bodies. And they were mapping it, and it was truly interesting, Tom, because the pulses from this electromagnetic celestial body almost replicated the heartbeat of, you know, of you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And so the comment was made that, you know, obviously this electromagnetic pulse was basically blanketing our planet, which then doesn't, you know, it doesn't take a huge leap to understand that if that's going on, then everybody is being affected by that the same way. And then they went on to map out a lot of the our planet's, you know, misgivings, tragedies, and everything else, and showed, you know, mm-hmm. basically showed the timelines. And it was truly, you know, and I know a lot of people listening right now think I'm probably, you know, completely off my rocker, but it's extraordinary when you look at the data, you know, from a large comprehensive point, that, you know, basically collective consciousness has a bearing on what's going on.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll join you off the rocker, Dave. I don't mind that, because I totally agree with you. There's a lot of evidence that collective consciousness is operating, that operates through frequencies, and that there may be, in fact, a fair amount of chaos in that signal, which disrupts things, but it can be right. balanced out by more coherence from the heart. And
right.
if you follow that line of reasoning, then it becomes possible for a lot of hearts working in unison at a frequency of true love and connection and gratitude to connect right. and sort of restore the coherence into the system, which then may have all sorts of effects on how we think and how we perceive.
Yeah, and, you know, I talk about it every week, Tom, and one of the ongoing things is, you need to start paying attention to this positive energy, because energy doesn't really care whether it's negative or positive.
Right.
And, you know, it, depending on where you're at, you can amass enough negative energy to where you're creating the situation that you're in, or you can choose the other direction, but it's a matter of choice, and it's a matter of creation, really. And, you know, that, You can greatly affect your life if you choose to do that.
I agree, and that's really the fundamental of heart intelligence. Is this? It restores calm, clarity, and coherence to your life, which makes you think more clearly. It's not just a matter of feeling better. You think more clearly. You're much more able to face the world and make better decisions for yourself. You're able to connect better with others. So it has great sort of implications for our skill set for the future. And then, of course, collectively, it says that we can probably turn the world around if we have a minority of people who are doing it. I don't think it takes all 7 billion. It probably just takes 40% or something. But right. if you can change enough hearts and minds, you're going to get a collective change. And I would say, from my standpoint, right at the moment, we're probably in the midst of a struggle, a tug of war. We got two poles of energy going. One is chaotic and one is coherent, because there's a lot of good things happening in the world, a lot of coherence, a lot of people really working on things, and yet right. we know it's a very disrupted world. And, you know, the question is, over the next 20 to 30 years or whatever the figure is, which side is going to prevail? I'm optimistic. I think it's going to be the positive side, but it does take an effort. But there's a lot of emphasis on love these days, and right. a lot of people practice good things, and, you know, maybe it'll happen sooner than we think.
Well, I would hope so. Tom, I want to thank you so much for spending your time with me today. It's been an absolute joy. And for those of you that are really interested in Tom's project-based learning, again, go out to his website, which is www.thomarkham.com, and look at what Tom's been doing. Thanks again, Tom.
My pleasure, Dave. Thanks a lot.
All right. Be well, my friend. Okay, folks. I hope you enjoyed the show. It's always a treat to talk to Tom. We'll be back next week with another fabulous guest. I want to thank Dave for running the booth. I want to thank you, my great audience, for being there. Remember, the individual has always had to struggle to keep from being overwhelmed by the tribe. If you try it, you will be lonely often and sometimes frightened, but no price, ladies and gentlemen, is too high to pay for the privilege of owning yourself. Be well, have a great week, and we'll see you next Wednesday.